Welcome to the Cardboard Conjecture Podcast. We're a podcast about board games where we have opinions and conclusions formed on the basis of incomplete information. On this episode, we will talk about the games that we played recently and maybe some games we've picked up. Who knows? And we're going to continue the critique of the Board Game Geek Top 100 going from 70 to 61. Here we go. This episode of Cardboard Conjectures brought to you by Amazing Stories Comics and Dragon's Den Games. Welcome to the Cardboard Conjecture Podcast. I'm Norm.
And I'm Chris.
And as always, we're going to start things off by talking about our games that we've played recently or picked up. And Chris, what are we going to hit for the feature? Where are we at and what are we doing?
We are still going through the top 100 list on BGG. I think we left off at number 71. So we're going to be doing 70 through 61 on this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait. We did, you know, you had mentioned because last list that we didn't poo-poo any games. It was pretty much
it was a good group of games last year, and hopefully,
I'm looking ahead, and I don't see any games that. Well, there's one on here that I kind of really.
It's always going to be something. There's always going to be something.
But before we hit that, what have you played recently?
Well. I went back to, if anybody listened to the last episode, I played Twilight Struggle a couple weeks ago and lost horribly. So I had to redeem myself. And so Joe and I played again last night. We played a game of Twilight Struggle. He was the Americans. I was the Russians. And the world ended very differently this time. It was a sea of red.
I thought it was like a sea
of his tears and a sea
chunk of
red.
Glass.
Yeah, exactly. The Russians definitely dominated in this one. So we need to have another game in the near future as our third game tiebreaker on that one.
Now, what did you grok? What clicked in this time when you played? Was it working the cards differently?
Working the cards differently. I think he also had a couple of bad hands that came up where things just were not going his way at all.
So you can't time how your cards come out.
No, not at all. Not at all. So I focused a little bit more on spreading out more than I had in the first game. The first game I was very focused on trying to control Asia, to the chagrin of pretty much everything that I was trying to do. Things just worked a little bit better for me. Things came up the way that I needed them to. And yeah, I didn't worry too much about, I worried more about the big picture instead of just small areas, which was definitely beneficial. So.
And then you can see a through line, and Matt, makes your decision space a lot easier.
Yeah, he had some really good control areas, but then the scoring cards just didn't come up for him the way that he needed to. So that was unfortunate, but you know, it was a really good game. We definitely need to play it again. And then it ended fairly quickly. So we brought out Outer Rim, Star Wars Outer Rim after that, and had a big, gigantic game of that where he was focused on delivering goods all across the galaxy, and I went bounty hunting as IG-88. I had a broken arm at one point, but it didn't slow him down. So I think the coolest thing at one point, I had Han Solo as one of my crew members, and then the bounty for Han Solo came up. So I was like, well, sorry, Han, it's time to replace you.
Your shoes untied.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, clonk. But yeah, I had bounties for Han and Lando both at the same time. And yeah, Yeah, it went crazy. Things went really, really well for IG-88.
What you reading there, boss?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, how about yourself?
I kind of went the same route as we talked about with that whole card-driven game system. Mm-hmm. And I had another sit-down with a game that has a
deep history with me, because I love it, is The Expanse, the board game. One, because I love the IP, and two, because it's area control. And I think I'd mentioned on an episode before of how the whole idea of you either take the action points, because everything is an asymmetrical action point driven kind of system, but the cards also have events, and there's four, if you know the IP, there's four factions in the game. There's the UN, Mars, Protogen, and the OPA. And each one represents, you know, like one is the, you know, the old traditional matriarch, as, you know, as I had put it, right? And then Mars is the militaristic. The Protogen is the concept of kind of your subversive corporation that has spies and everything, and bad things grown in the lab kind of idea. And then the last one is the OPA, which is the rebels, the revolutionaries kind of thing. And the cards are really, really cool in the fact that it, like I'd said before, it reminded me immediately of GMT's card-driven system. Mm-hmm. But the twist that was put on it was this initiative track. I called it the dibs system, right? So if you picked a card out of the market, which would cost you victory points ultimately, and of course, like any market, the lowest one is worth nothing, and then it incrementally goes higher, and once it's taken, it just kind of shuffles down. But if you take a card that doesn't have your faction tag on it, you can't use the event, but you can use the action points.
Yes.
So if that happens, then the event is passed on to the next person that has dibs, that has ability to use that. Because not all the time, it might just be two of the factions that'll have dibs. And what, if you take it, if you're the top of the line, you go to the bottom. What that does, I mean, it's important because there are kind of tertiary connections to, you know, who's on the top of that track. So you want to pay attention to that. But as if a card comes to you and there's a free move of, hey, put two influence on any, you know, base in the outer rim. It's like, I'll take it. Thank you. Yeah. Right. As I was describing, deep meta explanation would point out is, yeah, I have so much fun with that game. Yeah. I think I got like second by a smidge.
Nice.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, I love the card-driven mechanism because it's, when you get your events, it's a good thing because, you know, you've got a hand of your cards, which are fantastic. But especially in Twilight Struggle, some of those events are gone from the game if you use them for events.
Oh, yeah.
So do you want to use that event right now, or do you want to just use it for its point value and do different things with it? And then hopefully your opponent gets that card later on, which they can use it for the points, obviously, but then the event will trigger, so you can kind of benefit a little bit more. I think the first few times that I played Twilight Struggle, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to play all my events. It's great. And then by the later point of the game, all I'm getting is hands of my opponent's cards. And it's like, oh, man, I burned through my stuff way too quickly. So I love that push and pull because, you know, you have to pick the right time to use your event cards.
Absolutely. The difference that I noticed in this game, which is unique, is that there is no hand. You're just,
right.
You're always looking
just
to the market.
Playing from the tableau, yeah.
That, you grab it, from play the, it, and it's gone. It's done, yeah. Right? So for me, as I mentioned, for my ADHD brain, I don't need a handful of options and, you know, that whole beautiful mind. I've done a tech tree on this one. I've done a tech tree on this one. It cleans it up. In my brain, at least, it cleans it up for me.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I still have trouble with the space track on Twilight Struggle. It's a flawed system, I think. I know why it's there, and I like the fact that it's there because you can ditch off your opponent's cards to it. But I wish that there was a different way that track worked a little bit, because you're totally at the mercy of the dice when it comes to...
Not a big fan of the output, the dice output.
Rather. Yeah, exactly. Output, yeah. Exactly. So, yeah. But yeah, that's great. That's awesome.
Oh, yay. We'll have to probably talk outside the podcast a little bit more about these card-driven systems. Yeah. Well, let's get to the meat of this one. Let's critique the BGG top 100 overall list. And why don't you start us off?
Yeah, I'll kick it off here with the game at is it number 70 overall here on BGG, which is called The Crew, The Quest for Planet Nine. And this is a game from 2019, designed by Thomas Singh and published by Cosmos. This game, you will go on many planet-discovering space missions in this cooperative trick-taking game. And this is a game, I think I played it once. I think I played it like three times in one night, but it was on TTS because it was during during lockdowns. And so it's a really neat trick-taking game. I don't know. Have you ever played it before?
I've played it a few times. Yeah.
Played it a few times. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a neat trick-taking game. You
cooperative.
Yeah. And everybody's working together in order to do the thing. So sometimes it's not in your best interest in order to take tricks because you need opponents to actually get a certain number of tricks as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Well, there's campaigns and each stage explains this is what you need to do.
Right? Yeah. So yeah, everybody has there's an objective that you have to do at the beginning of each round in order to move to the next scenario. And I thought it was a really cool twist on the trick taking game. Again, I'm not a gigantic cooperative game fan, so it doesn't hit the spot for me on there. And was there was something where you can't really communicate?
Well, there's a specific kind of minimized way of communicating.
Yeah.
In regards to this, this is the only card in this suit I have, or this is the highest card by putting a token somewhere on on a position. And I like that. I like the fact that this limited information feedback lets you speculate and watch the behavior. If you're a people watcher and you like the idea of let's all work together, but let's have an obstacle in our way that we have to kind of, ease around, this is a fun game. Yeah. And if you're a trick-taking fan, then you have to play. This is a campaign.
Yeah, I do love trick-taking games in general. Like they hit a sweet spot for me. And I love the fact that there's like 50 different missions within the box as well, which is really cool. So tons of replayability with it. I think for me, it didn't quite hit the spot because we played it virtually. So you can't really read people quite the same way as you can around a table. But definitely. And I think, again, for me, there's a lot of other trick-taking games that I'd rather play than this one here. But I love the space that this takes up within the genre. And I think it does some really, really cool things with it.
Well, and there's already been an offshoot, I believe, that they've gone underwater this time. So
Yeah. So all sorts of different stuff. But really, really cool game. But that was The Crew, The Quest for Planet Nine.
I have the privilege of talking about one of my favorite designers at Position. I can't say this without starting to giggle because Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure comes in.
Exactly.
At number 69, The Gallerist by Vital Lacerda. Amass a fortune and stake your reputation by operating a lucrative art gallery. This is plays 1 to 4 players. I've had probably the best games at full count because there's, again, Vital Lacerda, if anybody's ever played, as the designer himself has ever said, it's easy. You put one card down, you pick one up, or you put one worker placement down and you do the action, right? No, because this is one of those, if I want to do this, then I need to do this and this. And if I want to do this, then I need to back up a couple more steps and get this idea started. And it's, in my brain, it's one of those reverse tech tree kind of effective games. Mm-hmm. And I love it. But, does it break the frontal lobe for me sometimes?
it's a really cool game. I've only had a chance to play it one time. And you can bump people's workers in this one, right?
I think this is the one where you can bump.
Yeah, which I thought was really, really cool because there isn't a ton of spaces on the board that you can send your workers to.
Yeah,
it's pretty tight in that sense there. I think this was the second Vatel Lacerda game that I played after Kanban, which I love Kanban. I think that's my favorite Vatel game for sure.
Yeah.
But this one here, just the theme is so cool, and the board is crazy beautiful. I mean, again, Ian Tool art, which we're both big, gigantic fans of.
And for people that don't know, it's a worker placement where you have also kind of like area control, mm-hmm. where there's more spectators. Yeah, there's that interplay that is so, I mean, there's a simplicity to it with about four layers of complexity.
Yeah, on the surface level, it's you're basically running an art gallery and trying to show off different artists. But there's so much going on underneath that veneer.
Yeah,
it's a heavy, heavy game. And
it's a great game. I love it. I'll play
a great game. Yeah,
anytime.
I'm pretty sure this was one of the first games where while playing it, there was visible smoke coming out of my ears because my brain was melting. With every choice that I had to make.
Yeah. Little eye twitches every once in a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Well,
I don't think... I didn't grok what I was supposed to be doing at all in that game.
That's the thing, too, for me with a lot of Vatel Lacerda, or that halfway in, you go, okay, so the first half of the game jeopardized my ability to win the game. So... let's see how well I can recover now.
Yeah, exactly.
Right on. Well, you get the next lineup on a fave of both of them.
Oh, yeah. This is definitely one of my top five games, I think, of all time, which is Obsession by Dan Halligan and published by Kayente Games, which is Dan's company. We've talked about Obsession quite a bit on the show, and this is an amazing, amazing game. Especially for a game where the theme does not appeal to me in any way. Running an estate in Victorian England. You're basically, every player in this game is a family who used to be quite well off and they've fallen on some hard times. And what they're basically trying to do is they want to wed one of their children to this wealthy family in order to raise their standings within society. And through this game, you've got a hand of cards, which are your guests or your family members, and you're sending them to different rooms within your estate in order to host different events. And as the game progresses, you can get more rooms and host different events. And and every time that you host an event, of course, like the tile will flip over. So you can only use the first side once and once only. And sometimes when you flip over a tile, it's a better event on the backside. Sometimes it's not as good of an event on the backside that you can do because society doesn't want to do the same thing over and over again. But when you do flip tiles, they generally are worth more victory points, which you're going to need at the end of the game. So there's some set collection in terms of you want to get, there's five different colors of rooms, which represent types of different rooms that are in there, like sporting and, you know, in leisure, staff. Yeah, exactly. And the Fairchilds, which are the family that you're trying to woo, their family is attracted to certain types of rooms or events that happen. And you can play this. There's so many variants within the game, too. So you can play it so that it's either open knowledge or hidden knowledge. I like it with the hidden knowledge where one of these scoring seasons come up, you flip over the tile and it'll show you like, oh, they want this type of room. And you're like, I was really hoping that they were not going to pick that.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's the bonus if you win that season.
Is you get one of the Fairchild children to join your family, which is just so cool because they are very, very powerful. They give you huge benefits.
I love the rondelle of your notoriety and prestige.
Yeah, your prestige kind of goes up throughout the game and you can spend your prestige to do different things as well. But you really want to raise that throughout the game because that's worth a ton of points at the end. This is just such an amazing game. There are so many moving parts in this that, you know, there's... I don't think there's any game that does what this game does to the same degree. The hand management portion, because eventually you're going to run out of, you know, guests that you want to play to events. So you have to take a rest action, which allows you to get your workers all back. It allows you to bring all of your hand, all your cards back into your hand.
We should just have an episode where we gush all over this game, because
it really, yeah,
everything you're saying, I totally agree with.
Yeah, yeah, I really, you know, when we do meet up at some point, this year,
and then definitely upstairs, downstairs expansions. And,
yeah, it just adds so much more to it.
Bells and whistles.
Yeah, and there's like a basic version of the game, which is I think 16 rounds. There's a longer version, which is 20 rounds. Which doesn't seem like a huge difference, but oh my God, these four extra rounds. I don't know if I've ever really, I played the long version once or twice, but I much prefer just the regular
sprint.
Yeah. Game of it. And there's events that happen every, you know, throughout the game as well, where there's village fairs and, you know, holidays and all sorts of stuff. It's an amazing, amazing game. Hats off to Dan for producing this. It was a passion project of his, and he's done a top notch job.
Yeah,
Obsession, well deserving to be in the BGG top 100. Right now it's at 68, but because it hits such a small part of the gaming community, if it was out there more, I think that it would be even higher rated too.
Cool. I agree with everything you said. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Another game that has some depths to it, which I, and of course this, the IP, I love the IP. Number 67 is Star Wars Imperial Assault by Fantasy Flight, and it's designed by Corey Knitsa, Jonathan Wing, and Justin Kempainen, I think. Yeah, sorry. Oops. This is, I think the structure comes from, I'm looking at Descent Second Edition.
Yeah.
And then Lord of the Rings has a riff on this whole idea of the app using the Overlord. Mm-hmm. And in this case, this is Star Wars. I mean, it's basically the Rebels versus the Empire. And I've played this a few times. The blueprint of the mechanisms and the system of this game, very DNA'd in all three of those, as I said, Descent and Lord of the Rings. Yeah, I love this game. This is awesome game. As far as its position on the top 100, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You don't deny the Star Wars.
No,
I know that there's probably, I know that there's another one that's going to be higher up on this.
I think there are better Star Wars games out there, but this one is pretty amazing. I think it also owes a little bit of its design background to Wizards of the Coast Star Wars miniatures game from years gone by. It was like a collectible miniatures game.
I remember the...
Oh, God, that was great. And I loved that game. And then I played this a couple of times. And this is absolutely fantastic. And it's like a one versus many game as well, too, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, one person controls the Empire. And
you can play it that way, or you can play it everybody playing against the app.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's got the app version on there too. Yeah. It's really cool. I wanted to get into this game, but I also knew that it would be just a gigantic money sink because I'd want everything available.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's the thing with this genre or this area of game is it's like they get you on, hey, well, here's a booster pack. Hey, here's another character expansion.
Exactly. Yeah. And I could not justify, you know, $25 for a boss miniature who is your bounty hunter and, you know, two extra cards. But I mean, it's a really cool game and definitely well deserving to be on the top 100. Like we said, there are, I think, much better Star Wars games that are out there, which will be on the list much later. But it's a very, very cool
game. Right on. Okay. Next up.
Excellent.
Next
up is, number 66 is Grand Austria Hotel.
Yeah.
This is such a cool game.
This is really good.
This is a great, great game. This is from 2015, designed by Virginio Gigli and Simone Luciani, published by many different publishers, but I think Lookout Games currently has it on their roster. And in this game, you will be serving guests and preparing rooms to be the best hotelier in the Viennese modern age. Again, one of those games where the theme is just so weird, but a really cool game. It's a dice placement game where you're going to roll a hand, like a mittful of dice at the beginning of the game, and then set them up based on the numbers that you roll. So like all the fives will be grouped together, all the ones will be grouped together. And the more dice that there are in an action, the more powerful that action is going to be. So you are, again, at the mercy of the dice, but because you're rolling so many of them, it kind of, you know, tips the...
And it's input. It's like, a bit more. What can I do with this now rather than, is this going to cut me in the Achilles tendons or, you know, kingmaker?
Exactly. And then, you're basically, you're trying to get different guests, but you need to prepare rooms for them before you can take them. You need to serve them different types of foods that they want as well, which is really key. So you're managing, you know, your food production, you're managing your rooms, and, you know, all the while just trying to get these guests into rooms and trying to fill up your hotel before the game ends. Because you'll get bonuses for each floor that you manage to fill up or each cluster of rooms that you put in there as well. This is a really, really cool game.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, I really enjoy this one. It doesn't overstay its welcome, which is really nice too. It's not one of those like 3 hour, brain burning games. It does what it does extremely well, and it does it in a short play time, which is great. And there are so many paths to victory. It's not that you can go into this and say, okay, it's going to focus on yellow guests.
There's no scripts.
No, exactly. Which is really cool. I love this game. I know there's an expansion out for it now, which I haven't played. I actually don't own a copy of this at the moment, but...
Nor do I, and I would love to get one.
Yeah,
and I didn't have it. Yeah, Roland Wright, that just came out.
Oh, is there as well?
Yeah, how's this?
Yeah. Roland Wright for everything.
I know.
I do like Roland Wrights, but they've kind of flooded...
Yeah, I want to play this. I want to find
it. This is a fantastic game. And again, well-deserving to be on the top 100 for sure. It does some stuff really, really well. And I love the fact that I love rolling dice. The dice don't always love me rolling dice. But again, in this one here, it offsets it.
You get to decide what to do with them as well. So
Exactly. So yeah, it's very, very cool. Great game.
Okay, well, moving on to number 65 is a game that I love playing. I will play anytime. And the artist is, I just love the Miko's art. This is Paladins of the West Kingdom, came out in 2019. Invaders are coming from everywhere. Keep the faith and defend your homeland. This is kind of a worker placement, but kind of recipe building, kind of resource development, kind of upgrade. There's just tracks all over the place. It is, I don't want to say Euro because this is from down under, right? I believe this is Australia or New Zealand in origin, Oceania, let's call it.
Yeah.
So this is an interpretation of, you know, someone who grew up on Euros probably, because there are some great heavy decisions to be made in this game in regards to where you, how you, you know, expertisely, I don't know if that's a word. with great precision, check off all of those bonus scoring conditions, because it's the variability in regards to what are you playing towards. I like a game where it shows you, here's your objectives. Now it's up to you to decide how you get there. This also has, like I said, that recipe building aspect is kind of a riff on, at least from my perspective, a riff on Orléans, where to do a build action, you have to have three components or three, you know, workers or three discs. And as in Orléans, you can automate it by you know, putting a mechanical cog and reducing this three components down to two components to trigger this action. Same situation with this game. And I mean, I love the era. I love the theme. Mm-hmm. And the Miko's art is just on point for my, you know what it reminds me of the most is that Mad Magazine kind of like, it's crazy.
Over-exaggerated.
So as far as it being on this list at this point, absolutely. In the realm of all their games, I think there's a trio, which is Architects and Viscounts, and this one, this is my fave.
That's your favorite one. Yeah. It's a good game. I played it once and definitely would like to revisit it at some point down the line.
I love how we're able to, hey, this is a game I like. And then you've never played and vice versa.
Exactly.
Number 64.
Number 64 is going to be La Habra from the maestro Uwe Rosenberg, published by Lookout Games. And artist is, of course, Clemens Franz, as he does most of these games. And in this game, you will be establishing a supply chain by collecting resources, building industries, and shipping those resources.
Mm-hmm.
This came out in 2008, so it was a year after Agricola came out. And it takes Agricola and really like turns it on its head quite a bit. Yeah. It's not like Agricola in any way whatsoever, other than the fact that you still have to feed your workers and whatnot. But in this game, you are basically getting resources and converting those resources into better resources and then shipping those off in order to make more money so that you can, you know, do more things as the grade. And you can convert grain into bread eventually. You can convert fish into smoked fish. You can do
all depending on what buildings that you
get. Yeah, exactly. I'll be 100% honest. I do not like this game.
Oh, Jay.
Yep. Yep. I'm going to definitely poo-poo this one. I would just much rather play Agricola. I think that this one is fine, but if I have the choice between the two, Agricola does things much better. I think this one's abstracted in such a way that it just doesn't click for me the way that I want it to. I think Agricola does things so much better, so much cleaner, and with less, there's a lot of rules in Agricola, but less rules overhead than what La Havre has. I don't like it. I don't like it.
See, and I respect that because I'm on the other side of the fence saying, I adore this game because it is the jaunt away from the mechanical structure of Agricola. Because if you don't pick up certain things on the docks, they accumulate.
Yeah.
Then you have that decision to go, well, I wanted to get that card or that building because I want to charge people because they're going to want to come to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to leave that on the dock for this guy who really needs it.
Yep.
Now, that there is that Agricola idea. What I love about this game is that, as I had mentioned before, your end game target is all about getting to those steel ships.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the payoff for me is okay, we went through this minutia of, you know, of surviving and building and getting better. But what are we going to do with it? And in my head in La Havre, it's like, then you ship it out for points, right?
Yeah.
Or you build the big, you know, steel monster.
Yeah.
I appreciate it from all that aspect that it gives me everything I love about Agricola and more.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, I would rather just sit down with Agricola and it's very, very focused. And, you know, you're, I don't know, that one just, it hits the sweeter spot for me than this one does.
Absolutely. And that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to really, really like this game. And maybe it's one of those situations where my expectations for it were so high that when I played it, I went, maybe I'm missing something. I wanted it to be great. And it was,
here's an interesting thing that I just kind of, you know, sauced out.
Yep.
I played this one first and then I played Agricola.
That might help too. That might help as well. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It's, like I said, it's just,
but
doesn't do it for me.
Being in this, so you don't think it needs to be this high or
on
the list?
I don't think it needs, maybe it's on the list. I don't know.
In the 90s?
Yeah, but I think that there's so many other games that are not on the top 100 that are deserving to be there.
Again,
okay. If I had the choice between this one or Agricola, it's always going to be
Agricola. Though it might be there because of nostalgia.
Maybe to some degree. I think it's a good game. It's just not a game that that works for me.
All right.
And that's totally fine.
And that's okay.
You know, that's good. Right. Yeah, we're all entitled to our opinions, Norm, even if you're wrong.
So. I am wrong a lot of times.
My wife tells me that.
Yeah. I'm not wrong about number 63. I have this game. I played a lot online And it is scratches the same itch as Terra Mystica, as Gaia. And this is Clans of Caledonia, came out in 2017. Lead your unique Scottish clan to economic might via production, trade, and export. It is designed by Juma Al-Juju, artist Clement Franz. And it is published by Karma Games. And I think there's a North American publisher that picked it up. But I haven't seen this game for a long time.
Yeah.
And when it came out, it had some strength. It had some legs to it. There, for me, it's like I said, it's very, very reminiscent of the Terra Mystica Gaia project, where you're developing areas on a map. And once you establish yourself, there's that whole proximity idea and that whole connectivity idea of getting more resources. Each round has a target objective in regards to, if you can do this, then here's some little bit more bonus points, right? As things come off your board, if you develop, you know, cheese or sheep, right? They come off your board and you get these compounding bonuses. Mm-hmm. As much as in the same manner as those other games that I've mentioned. I absolutely adore this game. But like I said, I haven't seen or heard hide nor hair of this. I don't know if it's out of print or if it's one of, because it comes from a very unique publisher. So I don't know if it's kind of went in the ether sphere and just kind of is hanging there. But
yeah, exactly.
As far as this game being where it is, I have no problems with it being in the top 100 because it has such variability. It has such kind of dynamic ways to win in regards to the different tiles that come out at different times.
It's a really, really neat game. I've played it a couple of times and I enjoyed each time that I played it.
Were you hunting to see if it's a
big I don't see on Board Game Blitz right now, it's sold out, but you know, it's one of those. And this is a game too where by far the highest ranked game by this designer. He's got a few other things that are there. I think he's got like six games that he's published or in the process of publishing, and this is by far his highest ranked game.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That is Clans of Caledonia. I'm just about to jump on my favorite is Board Game Oracle.
Aggregates
everything, but I can look at that later. There you go. Let's move on. Number 62.
Number 62 is The Quacks of Quedlinburg, a 2018 game where you are pulling ingredients from your stock to make your pot bubble, but hopefully not explode. This is designed by Wolfgang Warsch, published by Schmidt Spiel Games, and I think, again, several other publishers that are out there. This is a very cool push-your-luck game where each round, each turn, you are randomly pulling a chit out of your bag to add it to your witch's brew potion that you're trying to make. And you have all these different ingredients that you can purchase in order to do different things. But you never know what you're going to pull out at any given time, which is really cool. I adore this mechanism. I think this is such a fun game. Maybe it's a little bit long for what it does to some degree, but I've never had a bad time playing this game. It's got one of the worst names out there, The Quacks of Quedlinburg. But it is a really fun game. I love the fact that each player can customize their ingredients as they go on, because each round you can use the money that you earn. Each round, you basically, when you decide to stop, if you don't bust, you collect points or you get money. You collect points and get money. But if you bust, you only get one of those two things. And it's really tough because you're like, okay, well, I have 8 chits left in my bag. There's only one that I
don't roll a one. Don't roll a one. Don't
yeah,
roll
exactly. There's only one that I could possibly pull that will screw me over. I mean, that's a 12.5% chance that that's pretty good. You know, 82% or 88% chance that I'm not going to screw up, and inevitably you screw up. You have some get out of jail mechanisms in there where you can actually put a chip back into your bag that you pull. But it's hard to reuse that mechanism. Yeah. So you have to be very selective as to when you use it. But, using that at the right time can really save your bacon in this game. I love the fact that there's a catch-up mechanism as well, that if one person is way ahead, there's these rats that are all around the scoring board, and you count how many rats are between you and the lead player. And, you know, you can start further along on your pot because it's this, like, round track that kind of swirls that gives you scoring and whatnot. So you can start a little bit further ahead than other players if you're way further back, which is really nice. Sometimes it's not such a bad thing to be way in the back because it gives you that extra little bonus. And there's a lot of ways that you can catch up and do different things in this game. But I love this. It's a fun game. The artwork is really cool. Each of the ingredients can change from game to game as well. You don't have to use the same, you know, like your red ingredient isn't always going to do the same thing. It can do, you know, four different things. There's expansions in it that change it up a little bit too. There's events that happen each round as well, which is really cool. It does a lot of things well. I love this game. It hits that sweet spot for me.
See, I agree with a lot of that.
Yeah.
But for me, the whole, not poo-poo, but yeah. It's in my head, it's like, yeah, it was fun, but I don't think it's at a 60. I mean, I could see this at a like 90, low 80s.
Yeah.
But, and maybe it's just because it didn't, I had fun, but it didn't click for me. And you know what that means? It's just like,
totally.
It's like, hey, yes, I know I get how this works and this is exciting.
Yep.
But the agency of, okay, I know what the statistical, it's like that whole dice hate me, right?
Yep.
It's like, put it this way, in one sound, this is my interaction with this game.
Yeah, and see,
the first pull, it's like, oh, hey, yeah, I guess I'm done now. All right,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, when you pull your like your highest cherry bomb as your very first ingredient, like that's gonna set you up for failure for that round. There's
no
doubt about it. There are there's ways to mitigate it, but
I'm Will Wheaton when it comes to this.
Yeah, exactly. I will say that this is one of those games where, if you're a strategy gamer, you're not necessarily going to do well with this.
Oh, because it's just like let go of the reins and chaos reign. It's like, I mean, I'm a chaotic person, but it's like, I went through all this energy to get these things.
Yeah.
Come on.
There's definitely players within my group that hate this game because, you know, it's a quote unquote luck fest. There's still.
I'm not going to disagree with that.
No, exactly. There's still strategy that's in it, though, in terms of like how you build your bag properly. I really enjoy it. I think it's light enough. That being said, if you were like, all right, Chris, we can play Quacks of Quedlinburg or we can play Wonderland's War tonight, I'm going to go for Wonderland's War because they use the same sort of mechanism where you're pulling things out of your bag, but there's so much more game in Wonderland's War. And in Wonderland's War, it's not a bad thing to bust.
We always said that it's good to lose the battle to win the war.
Exactly. Sometimes it's a really, really, you're like, God, I really need this other stuff back in my bag. So I need this thing to go wrong for me now. So, and again, Wonderland's War probably wouldn't exist if this game hadn't have come out first, but, they're both great games. I would rather play Wonderland's War. But, they're both fantastic, and I do enjoy it.
Cool. Yeah. Right on. I think I got the last one here.
You've got the last one.
Number 61.
Through these ones.
You will be saying more about this than I.
I won't, actually.
Really? Oh, okay. Well, both of us will be, like, kind of guessing here. Conjecture. But it is at overall number 61, Cthulhu, Death May Die, 2019. Disrupt the ritual and slay the elder gods in this co-op dice chucker. It's designed by Rob Davio and Eric Lang. These are a couple of slouches in the industry.
Yeah. They've never really
done it. Published by Simon, who are not known at all for their minis.
But I got to say right now, as we try to conjecture this, There's two things, and there's three words here, and two things that I know right away won't appeal to either one of us. One, it's a co-op, so that doesn't appeal to me.
Co-ops, yeah.
No, for me. Oh, and then for you, the next two words are dice chucker.
Well, see, but this is different. When it's like the D&D part of me, it's like if this is a D&D kind of skirmish where you're going up and it's, then yeah, okay, yeah. I'm all right with that. But if it's sort of, I've spent 3 hours to set up this whole delicate, you know, hand-managed system and then I have to roll a dice to figure out how the game ends?
No. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Now, for me, the check boxes are, I'm not a big CMON fan. Like, I don't own Blood Rage and I don't own, you're right, that whole era kind of part. But Rob Davio, dig him. Eric Lang, he's got a crazy brain, which I totally respect. And CMON, when it comes to game production, no slouch.
No, top notch.
So, I've heard everybody that I've heard that has played this has had very positive things to say about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree as well. I think, again, this one came down for me. I remember when the Kickstarter was out for it and I was like, nah, I'm good. I don't need to go into this because, again, it's just there's bloat. There's so many promos and Kickstarter exclusive things in this that are just unbelievable. This is a game that's going to cost you an arm and a leg if you want everything that...
Junkies beware.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so many expansions for it, and each expansion will add new scenarios and new investigators that you can use, new big baddies like Yogg-Sothoth and the Black Goat.
This would appeal to those gamers that this is their brain itch.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also one of those games where, all right, you know, I want to play the same game 8 times in a row. This is definitely one of those games that benefits from that. If you only play this once a year, you're probably not going to really enjoy it.
Yeah.
It definitely needs the repeated plays that are in there. And again, you know, the Cthulhu theme is overdone far too much, in my humble opinion.
I've never been a big Cthulhu fan.
I love Cthulhu Wars. I think that's a fantastic Cthulhu game. And then when I got into that game, I was like, oh, maybe I like Cthulhu. And I tried to read some of the stories and it didn't really draw me in at all. I've played a couple other Cthulhu themed games and it hasn't really done it. Again, Cody in our game group, he loves the Cthulhu mythos. And this would totally appeal to him. Yeah, I think it's just one of those games. It's fine.
Yeah,
I think. But it's definitely not going to be a game that I'm going to go back to.
Is it deemed worthy at positions?
I don't think so.
You think it should be lower on the list?
I think it should be lower on the list. I think that, again, you know, we just talked about Star Wars Imperial Assault.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think these two games can do things very similar, where they're campaign driven. You've got, you know, all these missions and stuff that you're doing. I think that the Imperial Assault is a way more enjoyable game than Cthulhu Death May Die. And maybe I'm completely wrong on that because I am conjecturing it because I've never played it.
Yeah, same here. Right.
Yeah, I've watched some videos on it and nothing that I saw in this game jumped out at me as being something that was going to like really appeal to me.
All right then. Well, yeah, we've hit the end of this list.
Yeah.
And there's maybe a couple of games on there that I would want to have in my collection that I don't have. I don't think I could have, that falsetto could have climbed any higher.
I was waiting for it to go higher.
Grand Austria Hotel.
Yeah,
I would love to find a copy of that one.
Yeah, yeah. I think because the expansion just came out for it, that it's now, because it was not published for a while. Like you couldn't find it at all. And I think now it's readily available again.
Yeah.
And I should probably pick that one up because it's...
And the gallery is at a reasonable price would be so fun.
Well, that's the trick, right? Because that's definitely not a reasonably priced game.
So. Hey, look, a unicorn.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, if I saw a copy of the Gallerist sitting in a flea market this weekend, I would pick it up in a heartbeat.
But then look around for cameras. Am I getting punked?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm not going to spend the price that that they're currently asking for that game out there. But yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, I think that this one here, there was a few games on this list that I just don't think need to be in the top 100. But, you know, it's just stuff that just doesn't appeal to me personally. And that's totally fine.
And then you've just described subjectivity.
Exactly, exactly.
Right on. Well, let's wind this down by saying thank you to everyone for taking the time to have a listen. Yeah,
you betcha.
And I'm as I said apologetically before we start recording, I was doing housework. I'm going to go back to housework now and finish what I was doing. But thank you so much.
Yeah.
Anything on the way out, Chris?
No, not really. I'm just looking forward to scratching off the next batch here next week, and hopefully getting in. I'm hoping to get in some a little bit more gaming next week as well.
So, yeah, for sure.
Let's see how it goes.
All right. Well, take care, everybody.
Take care.